with the message. I want to read you one little thing from this. One from anatomy and one from biology. There's a sac called the pericardium, which is a tough, thin, fibrous membrane which surrounds and protects your heart. Imagine it this way. Your heart is in a plastic sandwich bag with another sandwich bag surrounding it. And between the two bags is an oily, lubricating fluid. Your heart is essentially encased in this tough sac with the lubricant fluid between the heart and the sac. The pericardium must also beat in rhythm with the heart. Heart palpitations occur when this is out of sync. Often the pericardium is beating at twice the rate of the heart. One cause of such palpitations are electrical problems created by a shortage of magnesium. But why is there this oily fluid surrounding the heart? When the heart beats, it can now slide around in the fluid without creating friction. Friction, like the rubbing together of your hands, produces heat. A heart without this marvelous sac, the pericardium, would soon produce enough heat to kill us. How do evolutionists explain this? During the process of evolution, how many hearts would have died from overheating because the sac had not yet evolved? What about the fluid in between? When would that have evolved? A heart without a fluid-filled sac is an overheated heart. Both had to have appeared at the same time. These kinds of details are ignored by those who believe in evolution. They just wave a magic wand and say, evolution did it. In other words, chance. God designed the lubricated sac, called the pericardium, to be fully functioning from the beginning in order for the heart to survive. Here's one from biology. You know, the desert is an extremely harsh environment. So how do animals survive? Let's consider two of them, the jackrabbit and the kangaroo rat. The jackrabbit has large, floppy ears. Biologists once thought that large rabbit ears were only used to enhance hearing. However, we now know that their ears perform an even greater function. Scientists investigating heat-stressed jackrabbits found that the blood leaving the ear was cooler than the blood entering the ear. They found that when the jackrabbit was too hot, it would expand the blood vessels within its ears, allowing more blood to flow through and thus removing body heat. The large ears act like radiators. During the midday heat, desert heat, a jackrabbit sits in the shade of a bush with its ears erect, radiating heat away from his body and keeping himself cool and comfortable. The kangaroo rat conserves water because open sources of water do not exist within its desert habitat. As the kangaroo rat digests his food, his very cells capture and reuse the normal waste product of the food breakdown process, water. He gets water. Then he conserves this water by being nocturnal, sweating little, and having extraordinarily efficient kidneys. These desert creatures are obviously designed to survive and even thrive in such harsh conditions. Could random chance mutations caused this? Or was it a powerful designer, which gives us the better explanation for these survival mechanisms? Because if they evolved, how would they have survived? Something to ponder on, don't you think? Oh, I think so. Problem is, too many people don't like to ponder on things nowadays. But we're going to ponder a little bit on the scriptures this morning. Just three verses this morning. So, to draw your attention to, I just want to deal with three verses in the 12th chapter of Mark's Gospel, verses 38 to 40. And then we'll take it apart little bit by little bit. In his teaching, he was saying, Mark chapter 12, verse 38. In his teaching, he was saying, beware of the scribes who like to walk around in long robes and like respectful greetings in the marketplaces, and chief seats in the synagogues, and places of honor at banquets, who devour widows' houses, and for appearance's sake offer long prayers. These will receive greater condemnation. So it's still Tuesday of the Lord's last Passover week. The religious leaders comprising of the Pharisees, Sadducees, the chief priests, and the scribes, they couldn't trap Jesus with their questions. And so they would not ask him any more questions. Instead, they left him. And they would go and they would plan how to destroy and kill him once and for all and be done with them. That's what they thought. At least that's their thinking. But we're going to scout and discover this morning that Jesus is not done with them. Now, he didn't speak to them directly, but we're going to see that he's not done with them, even though they have now left him. And this time, he directs his piercing and penetrating gaze and ire toward the scribes. And this would include most of the Pharisees as well, because generally the scribes were Pharisees. Now, as I stated before, the scribes were those who were professionally trained to interpret the law of Moses. That was their task. That's what they were trained to do. From the age of 30 on, that's what they were trained to do, was to interpret the law of Moses. And in fact, they spent most of their time going over every jot and tittle. You've heard that phrase before. Going over every jot and tittle of the law, arguing with each other and others, who were the so-called religious leaders, considering how do we interpret this law? Does that sound familiar? Are there not people out there in the world today who like to take the word, and they do, they want to look at every jot and tittle of the word, and what do they do about it? They argue about it, don't they? Go over and over and over it. Oh, well, I say it means this. Well, so what? You're wrong. It means this. This is what I say. Brothers and sisters, That's why we have so many different denominations today. I mean, thousands upon thousands of denominations today. Because they did what the scribes were professionally trained to do. Take apart the word. Well, I think it means this. No, it doesn't mean that. It means this. So we'll build our own little group around it. And see, that's what the scribes did. And that's what many are still doing. And that's why we have all these many denominations. But that's not the purpose of the message this morning. We're going to look at what Jesus says here to them, to the scribes. And with that in our mind, as we turn to the text this morning and examine this, we're going to discover concerning this, but then how we can apply it to today, to not only our lives, but to our world around us, and what is happening in the church. What Jesus does here first, Jesus is giving a warning concerning the scribes, which is made up of Pharisees. He said, beware. So he gives a warning in his audience now on this Tuesday. His audience consists of those that are in the temple area, the people who have gathered there for the Passover and for the Passover week. So there's probably many people there still in the temple area. Not as enemies, of course. But there are many people there. But more pointedly, the disciples of Jesus are there with him. That's who he wants to hear this. You see, it must be stated, and I think it's important to do so, it must be stated that Jesus is not indicting all scribes. He's not saying all scribes are like this. He's not indicting all of these men who are the scribes. There were undoubtedly those who did good things and taught well. Remember what he said to the last scribe that came to him. Remember what he said to him? Because the scribe told him, he said, you have said well. And remember what he said to him? He said, you are not far from the kingdom. So if Jesus thought they were all like this, would he have said that to that scribe? You're not far from the kingdom? I don't think so. And as I've said before, we don't know if that scribe ever entered the kingdom or not. The kingdom didn't arrive until on the day of Pentecost. His kingdom is equal to the church. We don't know if he entered or not. But Jesus said, you're not far, to a scribe. So he doesn't indict all of these men. Jesus is pointing out those scribes who do the things that he mentions. Notice this time, also, it does not have to do with their teaching. It doesn't have to do what they were teaching. It doesn't have to do how they interpreted the law. It doesn't have to do with what they were teaching. It has to do with actions. It has to do with their behavior, with their conduct, how they conduct themselves. So notice what Jesus says about their actions. Now, the parallel passage for this, if you want to look, is found in Luke I get this right here. Luke Get my passage right. I believe it's found in Luke 20. Yeah. In Luke chapter 20, verses 45 through 47. In Matthew, this is one we're all very familiar with, is Matthew chapter 23, which is a long one. Matthew 23, about the whole chapter. If you turn back to Matthew 23, beginning with verses 1, one through 34. Basically, the whole chapter, Matthew 20, chapter 23. That's where Jesus pronounces his woes upon them. Remember, and you look at those and see some of the things he calls them. You know, because Jesus is supposed to be meek and mild. You know, and he never said in a bad word about anybody. Really? Well, you read Matthew chapter 23, you'll see differently. He has 8 woes there for the scribes and Pharisees. And at the end, he calls them a brood of vipers. What interesting. Anyway, it's debatable here how much of what Matthew records in chapter 23 of his gospel is parallel to what we find in Mark and in Luke, to what Mark and Luke relate. A significant part, and this is important to see, a significant part of Matthew here is closely parallel with Luke 11, Matthew 23. It's parallel with Luke 11, 37 through 52. So Luke 11, 37 through 52, closely parallel with that. It's also closely paralleled with Luke 13, 34, and 35. Now those, in Luke 11, Luke is more chronological for us, more timeline, whereas Matthew and Mark aren't. But this was, Jesus said those things during what we call the Perean ministry. It's identical with the conclusion of the Lord's discourse that we find in Matthew chapter 23. What Matthew has done is more than likely he has combined several discourses that were delivered over different various times over the Lord's ministry. On the other hand, what we find in Mark and Luke is also probably just a portion of what the Lord said concerning the scribes and the religious leaders of the day. But getting back now to what Jesus is saying here, the Lord gives us three. He gives us three primary characteristics of the behavior and the conduct of these scribes. He gives us three primary characteristics of these men that are not to be emulated. So we're going to look at these in turn. Notice the warning he gives here. Beware of the scribes. And again, he's not saying that all the scribes do this. He's saying that those who do these things. Beware of the scribes who like to walk around in long robes and respectful greetings in the marketplaces and chief seats in the synagogues and places of honor at banquets. What is that? Why, I think that if you Look at what John says. And John heard this, by the way. I think it goes back to what John says in the first letter of John. First John 2, 15, 16. Do not love the world, nor the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, and the lust of the eye, and the boastful pride of life is not from the Father, but is from the world. I think there are these characteristics, these three primary characteristics that Jesus is talking about, can be divulged down to those three things. But specifically, this one, the boastful pride of life. See what how Jesus is describing these sort of scribes, they like to walk around in long robes. They like to walk around in their long robes, and these weren't just any robes. These were white linen robes that really stood out. They weren't what the common people of the day wore. These were very ornate robes. Probably as white as you could get them during that time period. Now that traditionally they wore these white robes. However, some of the scribes wore longer robes than others did. And they wore longer robes with fringes at the bottom that the others didn't. Then why? So that they would stand out and be noticed. So people would see them and say, "Oh, you see so-and-so? Oh, that scribe, man, he's really dressed, isn't he? Boy, he must have it made. God is sure looking down on him, isn't he?" That's why they did it. To be noticed. To stand out and be noticed. In other words, see, they didn't dress like the common people of the day. Excuse me. And they made sure that the common people knew that. That they were different. That they were special people. We've all seen certain so-called religious leaders of our own day and time do much of the same thing, have we not? I saw once in a tele-evangelist preaching away, you know, to his congregation and that, and he was telling them all what they could have. And he was showing them, "See these rings on my fingers? See these rings? Why, if you're with God, you can have that too. But you see, I got them. You see this watch? See this watch? Why, that's the most expensive watch you can get." Literally pointing that out. I read about not too long ago, a minister, I forget where he was at, some televangelist and prosperity guy, who actually berated his congregation because he wanted this certain watch. I don't know what the name of the watch was. Jennifer heard that. Yeah. I can't remember what kind of watch it was. But anyway, it was a very expensive watch. And he berated his people because he didn't have that watch. So what kind of people are you? And he just really laid it on them because he didn't have that. He expected them to get it for him. That happened but just recently. Doesn't matter the color of skin or whatever the guy was, but that's what he did. He berated them for it. Later he repented. He told him he was sorry. You know the reason why he told him he was sorry? Guess how many people put that on their phones? You know our phones today, you can't get away with much of anything, huh? A lot of his people put those on this phone. It went, what Jennifer calls it, it went viral. So he had to say he was sorry. But you know, he still really wanted that watch. And he expected his people to get it for him, see? Well, that's the way these scribes were. And what they would wear. And that's what Jesus is describing them here. That's still going on today. The boastful pride of life. Jesus is showing us their conduct and their behavior and what it is. They see they love the praise of the people. What he says here. How they're greeted in the marketplace. Oh, how you doing, so-and-so? Hey, scribe, how's it going there? My, you look good today. That's why he said what he did. You can just imagine what it was like. They fed on the attention. We know religious leaders today like that. They just feed on the attention that they can get. They wanted and not just religious leaders either. We know many prominent people today, that's what they do, is they feed on that attention. Jesus says they wanted the best seats in the synagogues and the places of honor at the feasts they attended. You see, in the synagogues of Jesus' day, in the center of the synagogue, in the front of it, was a chest. And that chest contained the Torah, the law of Moses. And on each side of the chest were stone benches. And these scribes, they wanted to sit on those stone benches. And why again? The boastful pride of life. These scribes would face the audience. Here's the chest that contains the Torah. And they're sitting on each side of it. Hey, look where we're at. But you see, they're placed on either side, those stone benches are, but they would face the audience. So all the audience could see them. They wanted to be seen. They wanted to be up there. That's what Jesus is talking about. Boastful pride of life. At the feast, they wanted to be given the places of honor. In fact, many of them insisted on it. They wanted to be seated next to the host who was hosting the feast, giving the feast. Look where we're at. And thus, they would be served first. And guess who would get the best food? And the best of the drinks. Why, they would. They felt that they were entitled to it. That ring a bell for today? But it's not only that. There's also what Jesus is describing here. Not just the boastful pride of life, but also the lust of the eyes. What is the lust of the eyes, brothers and sisters? It It boils down to what the lust of the eyes is greed. They were greedy. They believed that what they saw was theirs. As Brother R.C. Foster said many years ago, they longed for wealth. They longed for wealth because it brought them comfort, and it gave them luxury, and it gave them recognition and the honor of men. But more than that, they probably also claim that it was a mark of God's favor upon them. God was really blessing them. I don't know about you, but He's blessed me. See what I've got? See how I look? See where I'm at? Well, that's God's doing. Not. You don't get it. But He's given us that favor. And notice the lust of the eyes and their greed. Jesus said they devour widows' houses. Now here's the thing. You see, the scribes, these Pharisees who were scribes, they could not be paid for interpreting the law. They couldn't make their living that way. They were supposed to have a side job. They were supposed to have a job where they worked with their hands to make their way in the world, to make a living, to survive. That's what they were supposed to do. However, they could accept gifts and hospitality. Much like that guy wanted with the watch, you know. He just wanted his congregation to gift him that. Although that watch, from my understanding, was cost thousands upon thousands of dollars. Where better to get that from? And what Jesus says here, you might seem obscure what He's saying here, they devour widows' houses, but it's not. Where better to get what they need to live on than from vulnerable widows? As Grant Osborne says, biblical scholar Grant Osborne says, widows were the most vulnerable group in society in Jesus' day, and they needed a lot of help. And often they would trust their dowries and their other worldly goods to these so-called community leaders. That's what the scribes, you know, said of themselves. Why they? That's what they were. They were leaders. They were community leaders, religious leaders. And these widows would entrust their worldly goods to them. And so all too often the scribes would take advantage of them. There have been many suggestions about how. As Osborne says, they could have taken advantage of a widow's hospitality. They could have defrauded her of funds entrusted to them, devour widow's houses. They could have seized her home when she could not pay her debts, or charged her for legal advice, or even this. They could have even charged, we don't know this, but this could have been partly what Jesus was talking about. They could have charged this widow for the widow going to them and say, pray for me. Pray to Yahweh for me, for help. Oh, you want us to pray for you? It's going to cost you a little bit. You know, you give us a little bit and we'll pray for you. They could have been doing that. That's what he said. They devour widows' houses. And what you see here, what Jesus is talking about, and he's saying, do not emulate this. He's saying, beware, is that their hypocrisy is evident. That if people would just look, they would see their hypocrisy. You see, while these certain scribes did all of the above, they would make a show of how pious they were. That's what Jesus means by the making their long prayers. You know, prayers that would probably last maybe for half an hour or an hour or more. Because these were uttered not for the benefit of Yahweh. These were uttered for the benefit of the people who heard their prayers. Oh, look at us. See how pious we are? See how religious we are? See how we've got it made with Yahweh? So what they would do, they would make their prayers as long as they could, and they would fill it with so much verbiage, you know, just to show how grand they were and that how different they were from the common people. And notice what Jesus says then, finally, about what will happen to these people. These will receive greater condemnation. So he's telling the apostles, he's telling his disciples, do not be like them. They are not to be emulated. And later he tells them, or earlier he had told them, and said, it's not that you are to ignore their teaching. Just don't do what they do. Because they don't live by what they teach. Don't emulate them. Don't take upon their conduct and their behavior. Isn't that an example kind of what the Lord's brother talked about? We find in James chapter 3. Specifically verse 1, but not many become teachers, my brethren, knowing that as such we will incur a stricter judgment. Jesus says these scribes would be judged greatly. It kind of sounds like that what Jesus is talking about there does kind of sound like there's degrees of punishment, doesn't it? I think so. Brother Paul McReynolds said, this is why this is so important. As Brother Paul McReynolds said, teaching occurs not only by what one says, but perhaps even more by what one does. It is crucial that the teacher not only speak the right words, but also live them. So Jesus was saying, these scribes, they teach the right words, but they don't live by them. So the scribe Jesus describes here that their prayers and their public life are only for what? What many are doing today. It's only for show. And it's not for him. It's for people. Not God. Not for his benefit. But it's for show and not for the worship of God. So as we conclude this morning, this warning that Jesus has given here can certainly be applied to today, both in the political and the religious realm. You know what it makes me think of? And we see this today, and I'll close with this. It makes me think of what Paul said in 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 3. Remember what he says there? For the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine. I've been reading lately about from one of our quote-unquote leaders in our restoration movement, New Testament church, saying that doctrine needs to be put to the side because it's all about Jesus. We don't want doctrine because doctrine would just cause problems. Doctrine will cause disunity. And we want to be united. It's all about Jesus, you know. But I think it's all about this. For the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine, but wanting to have their ears tickled. They will accumulate for themselves teachers in accordance to their own desires. Do we not see that going on today? I think we can see it in many places. And will turn away their ears from the truth. Now notice, Paul doesn't say truths, many truths. He says truth. And will turn away their ears from the truth and will turn aside to myths. That's what we've got going on today. And a lot of it is because too many in church leadership today, they're getting caught up in their own personal benefit. What can I get out of it? What can I gain? What can I get? What kind of recognition can I get? Monetary awards, a fancy watch, you know, $1,000 suits, what have you. Marvelous car. What can I get out of it? And that's what Jesus is saying to them. About the scribes, because that's what they were doing. And Jesus saying to his disciples, don't be like that. Don't emulate those things. Don't get caught up in things for one's own personal benefit and what one can gain and how recognized one can be. There are many out there who shouldn't be teaching and who shouldn't be preaching. And the reason why is because they're doing it for what they can get, not for Him. See, that's what's important. Big warning there that Jesus has given us. Big warning that we can look at as far as today is concerned. Let's turn to 584. Tony, you come and play that. We haven't sang this for a while. God be with you till we meet again. Let's stand as we sing.